Even with abundant testing, the West Wing is a center of a significant COVID-19 outbreak. We're talking about President Trump's infection and repercussions on Capitol Hill, the nation, as it reacts. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Are you worried about President Trump's condition? Do you believe all the information that the president's doctors and administration is sharing with the public? What effect does the president's COVID diagnosis and treatment have on the campaign trail and the November general election? We're at 800-642-1234. Tolu Olorunipa is a White House reporter for The Washington Post. Tolu, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, great to be here. Good morning.
Good morning. This has just been a whirlwind week of news since the president's diagnosis last week. Where we stand, he was released from the hospital yesterday evening. What is the latest on his health?
Well, the president was released from the hospital. He's back at the White House. He is not out of the woods yet, according to the doctors who talked about his condition. They said he is still fighting off some symptoms, but his symptoms are improving. We saw him walk up the stairs and use the Truman balcony to wave and present himself in front of the media. We did see him breathing very heavily, so there's some questions about whether or not he's suffering from shortness of breath. The long and short of it is that we don't fully know how serious the president's health condition is because his doctors have withheld a lot of information and decided not to answer some questions about the president's health. So we do know that he's able to walk on his own power. We do know that he is taking a wide variety of drugs to help him fight off his symptoms. But we don't know what his long-term prognosis is or whether or not he's going to be able to get back on the campaign trail or get back to normal anytime soon.
What questions that reporters have been asking again and again, what remains unanswered here about the president's health?
Well, we don't know whether or not he has lung damage. We don't know if he suffered from pneumonia. Based on some of the drugs he was prescribed, there's a high likelihood that he may have had lung damage. We know that he was put on oxygen at least twice while he was at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. We know that he suffered from fatigue and fever, but we don't know how high his fever was when he did have a fever. We don't know whether or not he's on blood thinners. And one of the most important questions that the White House and the medical team have refused to answer is when the president last tested negative for COVID-19. That would allow us to understand better whether or not he was infectious, maybe during the debate with Joe Biden or during multiple other events he had last week. And the White House has steadily refused to answer when the president's last negative test was. So we don't really fully have an understanding of how long he's been infectious, how long he may still have to continue to quarantine, and how serious his illness may have been.
He is on the steroid dexamethasone. What could that indicate about his lung function?
That drug is normally used only for severely ill coronavirus patients, people who are suffering from low oxygen, people who are in a really tough spot with their fight with the disease. It's not recommended for people who have mild cases. It could even harm people who have such mild cases. So there's a sense that this is a drug that was prescribed because the president had a very serious case of low oxygen, that his lungs may be damaged and may be impacted. He may be suffering or may have suffered from pneumonia. And the White House and the medical team have just not answered that. And we also know that that steroid has a number of different side effects, everything from euphoria to mental instability. And we don't know yet if the president is experiencing any of those side effects. The White House medical team was reluctant to talk about those. They said the president seems to be doing fine, that he's working and he's tweeting and he's operating as he normally would. So we still are trying to find out more about why he was put on dexamethasone and whether or not he's experiencing side effects.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Tolu Olorunipa, who is a White House reporter for The Washington Post. We're looking at the president's COVID-19 diagnosis, what it means going forward as he's returned to the White House, taking your questions as well at 800-642-1234. Tolu, the president downplayed the seriousness of the pandemic, saying, don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life. I feel better than I did 20 years ago. What message is he trying to send to Americans?
He is trying to send the same open up message that he has been pushing for quite a while. It's a message that is at odds with the public health guidance from his own government, from his own administration. But he's trying to tell people, get back to normal, open up the economy, don't allow COVID-19 to impact your lives. Don't even worry about wearing a mask or social distancing or avoiding crowds. I had COVID-19 and now I feel better than I did 20 years ago. So even though this virus has killed more than 210,000 Americans, it's not that big of a deal. It's just another flu and we should all get on with our lives. And that is a dangerous message, according to a number of public health experts who say that we're not out of the thick of things yet in this country. We continue to have close to 50,000 cases a day. States like Wisconsin are really struggling with high case numbers, and we're seeing rising death tolls in many parts of the country, even hundreds of Americans dying every day. So the president's message is at odds with the reality that this is not a disease to take lightly. This is not a disease that makes you feel better after you have it. It's not a disease that you should underestimate. And the president seems to be doing that.
On Sunday, the president took that SUV ride past the hospital to wave to supporters. He's been criticized for putting people at risk to make this ride. What has the scene been like outside Walter Reed?
Yeah, so the president was at Walter Reed for 3 nights, and during that time, he saw television coverage of lots of people gathered outside in crowds, a lot of supporters waving Trump flags and American flags and waving signs that show that they supported him, and he wanted to greet them. So he decided to leave quarantine against the guidelines that all of us are supposed to be following, and he decided to essentially leave quarantine and put a lot of people at risk, including the Secret Service agents who were in his close proximity inside that car. But the president seems to be operating under a number of different functions and different guidelines than the rest of us. And he seems to be flouting a lot of the guidelines that are set for the American public to keep everyone safe.
In the last moments we have with you, do you know when there are the next updates from his medical team?
We haven't heard yet. We do know that the White House has been holding these briefings on a daily basis, usually midday, and providing information about the president's health. So we'll be looking forward to see if later this afternoon we do hear from the president's doctors about how he's doing, about whether or not there has been any change in his prognosis, and how quickly we can expect to see him getting back to normal. We've seen that on a daily basis, so I would expect that today we would get another update as well.
Tolu, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Tolu Olorunipa is a White House reporter for The Washington Post. He has covered the White House since 2015, reporting from 5 continents and more than 20 countries as part of the Presidential Press Corps. We're talking about how an outbreak of COVID-19 that has struck the White House just weeks ahead of the November general election. President Trump tweeted yesterday, "Don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life." Are you? Do you think that the president's illness will motivate more people to take the pandemic seriously, or will it become a reason to dismiss the precautions Americans are being urged to take? Join in with your reaction. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation in a minute with Olga Kazan, a staff writer at The Atlantic. She stays with us. There's more conversation about COVID-19 spreading at the White House and on Capitol Hill. Your thoughts on the virus, back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're discussing the president's condition as he left Walter Reed National Military Medical Center last night following treatments for COVID-19. It's your reaction, your questions here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Here's the president's physician, Dr. Sean Conley, fielding questions from reporters yesterday afternoon outside the hospital in Bethesda, Maryland.
What was his last negative test and what was his viral load?
Everyone wants that. I don't have his viral load. Those are some of the diagnostics that we're sending out that will really tell us when it's safe for him to get back out and around people.
What do you want to know about the president's condition? Has the president's infection made you more likely to wear a mask? What questions do you have about how the executive branch is operating under this illness? It's 800-642-1234. Olga Kazan is a staff writer at The Atlantic and reporting on the virus outbreak inside the White House. Olga, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, take us, if you will, to the White House before the president's diagnosis. What was the atmosphere like there in terms of precautions that the administration was taking to prevent the spread, to prevent it from getting into the White House?
Yeah, it really looks like they weren't taking a lot of precautions. My colleagues and I have been writing about how in the West Wing, it's a small space, it's pretty crowded. People are there working and kind of bustling about, and they weren't always necessarily wearing masks. And we know this because there were a lot of photos taken of, especially the ceremony on September 26th for Judge Amy Coney Barrett, who is a Supreme Court nominee. And there was an indoor reception, which is the kind that we've been told not to have because it is leads to spreading the coronavirus. And people weren't wearing masks there either.
Do we know whether this was a super spreader event? Do we know how many people were at this event and who have tested positive?
Yeah, so it looked like over 100 people were at the event, and a number of them have tested positive. So Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina, Governor Chris Christie tested positive, the president of the University of Notre Dame, John Jenkins, Kellyanne Conway, who's Trump's former advisor. So you have all these people who are in Trump's orbit who tested positive after this event and this reception. The thing is, there's not really a clear definition of super spreader event. It's sort of a term of art. And we don't yet know whether all of those cases originated from the Amy Coney Barrett event. Some of those people might have come to the event already sick or already contagious.
So as the president returned to the White House yesterday, he took off his mask. He faced the American people. What do we know about how he has acted and, approached having this infection, this virus?
Yeah, so throughout the whole pandemic, Trump's approach to the virus has been to really play it down. He has kind of tried to present it as not a very big deal. And himself being infected did not really change that strategy. He said, don't be afraid of COVID, right before he flew back to the White House on Monday. He said, don't let it dominate your life. It unfortunately is dominating a lot of people's lives. Over 200,000 people have died. So he really, because he didn't crash out and get, it appears seriously ill in those first few days of having it, he's sort of saying, oh, look, it's not a big deal. I survived it and so will you. So let's just open on back up again and kind of face it.
We're talking with Olga Kazan, who is a staff writer at The Atlantic. We're discussing President Trump's COVID-19 diagnosis, what it means for the White House, the West Wing, the health of Americans, the campaign trail ahead in November. Your thoughts on any one of these points, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Jerry now, joining us from Glendale. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. I consider it to be reckless and irresponsible behavior on the part of the president to give this impression that the coronavirus is not anything to be afraid of. I wear a mask whenever I'm out in public. I think it was reckless for him to take his mask off when he was on the veranda. And his comment about he's feeling better than he has in 20 years is a clear effect of the steroid that he's on that gives a person a false sense of energy. And I also have a question. I wonder if other people noticed that he had very pronounced labored breathing as he stood on the second floor veranda at the White House. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Olga, what did you make of the labored breathing?
On Twitter that, when he was standing on the veranda, it looked like he was sort of straining to breathe. We don't really have a clear picture of whether his breathing is still labored because we haven't been getting a ton of information from his physician, Sean Connolly. They've kind of released information selectively and kind of only when it makes the president look very healthy. So we don't have a clear picture of exactly how bad he is right now. And it's worth noting that he will remain infectious for several more days. So he's not completely out of the woods yet.
Let's bring in Stephanie now, joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was thinking that if the side effect for a steroid was euphoria and instability, we wouldn't be able to tell if that he had that side effect because that's what his normal baseline is. And I am concerned that this will definitely cause his supporters to veer even further from protective mask wearing. A lot of them don't. And this will make them dismiss the COVID as something minor.
Stephanie, thanks. Yeah, and Olga, Stephanie at first brought up the dexamethasone and the side effects there.
Yeah, dexamethasone can have psychiatric side effects like other steroids. It kind of peps you up. The way it works in the body is it kind of revs you up and makes you feel energetic. So in the president's case, you know, he started tweeting a lot in all caps after he took it. He started, making kind of really boisterous statements. But as a lot of people pointed out, that's not entirely unusual for him. So it maybe just contributed a little bit to that instinct of his, that impulse to kind of talk a lot in all caps and with a lot of exclamation points.
Kristen from Fond du Lac called in, couldn't stay with us, but wanted to say Kristen feels like a widely public scheme of his is to distract from his debate performance and from the issues over his taxes, tax returns, or an opportunity to derail the election. So Kristen is wondering whether, he's changing the narrative of the election.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that his illness really hijacks the news cycle. But I don't know that he was purposefully trying to maneuver it so that he kind of derails the narrative with his illness specifically. It seemed like he might have been trying to kind of not reveal that he was sick until really like the very last minute when it was going to become very clear. So I wouldn't say that necessarily, but I will say that, yeah, Trump does not like talking about his taxes or about anything but kind of what's on his own kind of message and platform. So I would agree that he hasn't been engaged on issues around the debate or his taxes that were recently released.
There was a lull at Walter Reed on Twitter where the president wasn't active. What did it feel like as a reporter who follows his feed not hearing from him on social media?
Yeah, a lot of reporters said that, wow, this is really unusual because we normally hear a lot from the president all the time. He did release those video messages mm-hmm. from his presidential suite at Walter Reed. So we did have those. But it's unusual. You know, it maybe shows that he was kind of taking some time to recover there and to have the medications actually kick in.
When do you anticipate hearing from his medical team again? Do you think that Dr. Sean Connolly will open up more to reporters' questions and get to the heart of what reporters want to ask?
Yeah, you know, I actually don't think it's likely. I've written a little bit about presidential illnesses in the past, and really the White House physician is not very open about the president's exact health status. They very much are there to serve their VIP patient, the president, and for good reason. The president can face health threats and it's considered a national security issue. So they are there kind of to protect and to serve their patient and not necessarily to keep the public as informed as possible about the condition of the president. So I don't see him necessarily talking about anything that is, you know, not on a need to know basis, according to him, and that doesn't make the president look good.
So lab work and lung scans may not ever be answered?
Yeah. Well, so I heard the clip that I think that you played that, that had reporters asking, what is his viral load?
Yeah.
I don't think that's the kind of thing we would ever find out because, you know, first of all, that would be really hard to interpret for a regular person. But also that is not going to kind of reassure the public and make the president seem healthy.
We're discussing the president battling COVID-19 in the latest from Capitol Hill with the Atlantic staff writer Olga Kazan. President Trump tweeted yesterday, don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life. Are you thinking about the virus differently since learning the president has contracted COVID-19? Do you think that the president's illness will motivate more people to take the pandemic seriously? Join in with your insights, your questions, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update with Olga Kazan right here on the Ideas Network. President Trump returned to the White House last night, where he continues to be treated for COVID-19. We're talking about it on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A number of the president's associates in the West Wing and on the campaign trail have also tested positive for the coronavirus. Yesterday afternoon, the president's medical team briefed reporters and confirmed he'd be discharged from Walter Reed Hospital, but was not, quote, entirely out of the woods yet. What do you make of the president's trajectory with COVID, his campaigning, his event at the White House celebrating Judge Amy Coney Barrett's Supreme Court nomination last month? Join in along the way, 800-642-1234. We have the Atlantic staff writer Olga Kazan, who is our guide to developments. Olga, the president was criticized for taking that SUV drive past supporters in front of the hospital on Sunday, exposing perhaps Secret Service agents and hospital staff to the virus. What have you seen there about the criticism? Has that changed any minds at all or behaviors?
It doesn't appear to have changed any minds or behaviors. You know, I haven't been able to talk to any Trump supporters since this happened, but it seems that, you know, the people who support him before largely still support him. They see this as sort of him being unlucky to have gotten sick. You know, he had a crowd of well-wishers, obviously, that he was sort of like riding around and waving to. And, you know, they see it as, you know, unlucky that he got sick, but he's strong, so he'll persevere.
What about for Republicans? Has this outbreak changed the way Republicans are viewing the pandemic as we have seen more and more test positive?
You know, it's not clear. They kind of take their cues from Trump. I will say that right after he was diagnosed, there was like a pretty telling photo taken of Kayleigh McEnany and some of his other aides wearing masks and kind of standing apart and kind of with their hands to themselves. And that was sort of an unusual scene because normally we see folks from the West Wing looking, you know, without masks on and kind of as they were in the Rose Garden, sort of pretending like it's not 2020. And so it was unusual, but unfortunately, Kayleigh McEnany was diagnosed positive with COVID-19 anyway. So it shows, honestly, this has spread pretty far throughout Trump's associates. And, you know, he so far, it hasn't changed his attitude toward coronavirus. So I'm not sure that it'll make a difference for anyone else.
Last night, as he returned to the White House, he said into the camera that vaccines are coming momentarily. Is that true?
It might be true. We don't know yet. So the FDA is trying to kind of extend the process by which extend the amount of time for which people would be followed for side effects after taking the experimental COVID-19 vaccine. And the White House has basically said, let's shorten that time frame so that there's a chance that it could come out before the election. So right now, the agency, the FDA, and the White House are sort of at odds about how long exactly they need to track these patients to be sure there aren't any negative side effects the vaccine. The FDA is pushing for a slightly longer time frame, and the White House would like it out as soon as possible.
And then, of course, they have to convince Americans to take and accept the vaccine.
Yeah, and that's a whole other challenge. You know, we've seen the anti-vaccine movement has been pretty vocal in recent years. Something like only 51% of Americans, I think, in some polls say that they're willing to take the vaccine once it comes out. And I think some of these issues of, like, how safe is it really, you know, is the process politicized? Are they trying to push it out earlier just so, you know, we can have one before the election? I think that's kind of shaking people's confidence in it. And already the confidence in vaccines among some people is so kind of shaky and so tenuous that you know, this is really something where it's going to lead to a lot more doubts of the safety of vaccines.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Olga Kazan, who's a staff writer for The Atlantic, and we're discussing President Trump's COVID-19 diagnosis, treatment, what this means for the nation going forward, your reaction at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Peter now, joining us from Viroqua this morning. Hi, Peter.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Yeah. So my reaction is around the use of steroids. Being an asthmatic, I've been on prednisone quite a bit in my life, and I'm I have lived experience with the effects of being on prednisone, which is a steroid, and the president was on a steroid and may still be. And so I think it's misleading when he talks about he's feeling better than he has in 20 years and how great he's feeling, because taking a steroid like prednisone or what he's on makes you feel that way, and it kind of masks how ill you really are because you're in the process of healing. And so I'm not surprised. I am and I'm not. You know, I just sort of wish that doctors could be a little more forthright in talking about what it's like being on a steroid.
Peter, thank you. Olga, you know, there is firsthand there, Peter, saying this masks as your body heals.
Yeah, I mean, steroids, that's what they do. They kind of, you know, suppress that immune response that makes you feel really sick. So, so that's why we saw him kind of full of vim and vigor, you know, on Twitter and elsewhere in his videos. But, you know, as he rightly points out, like, you know, that doesn't mean that he's completely healed. In fact, you know, the president is still contagious. He's coming back to a White House staff that will be exposed to him, you know, regularly unless he stays completely quarantined in his room, which is not really likely knowing him. So he does still present a risk to people. And honestly, he's still at risk himself, even though he's feeling a lot better because of the steroids.
Could the president's illness derail or delay the confirmation process of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, so my colleague Russell Berman did raise that possibility in another story that we published, you know, given the fact that some of the senators who are key to her confirmation have also come down with COVID-19, they might not be back in time for the vote on her confirmation. But that kind of remains to be seen, how quickly those senators recover and whether they decide to hold the vote on the appointed day or whether they decide to move it.
What might this mean for the campaign trail? I think that, you know, people have also seen Biden continue to get out there, continue to campaign. What does this look like?
Yeah, you know, it's that's a really good question and not one that I or anyone really has the answer to yet. You know, a lot of people who get sick with COVID get sick for months. They're called long haulers. You know, they still have trouble breathing months later. So I am not sure about you know, a typical campaign schedule and whether that's something the president would be able to keep, you know, the long rallies, the travel, the kind of constant movement is something that's going to be very difficult for a COVID patient, you know, especially with an active case. Vice President Biden was kind of trying to do a lot of campaigning remotely. It does appear he's out on the trail now. Trump is really not the kind of person who is happy kind of staying quarantined. He likes to be out there with his supporters. So he's trying to get back out there, but it is a risky thing to do, and it's not clear how well it's going to work.
And I guess remains to be seen what the presidential debate on October 15th will look like. How might that be delivered?
Yeah, so there were some concerns after the first debate that the style in particular allowed for a lot of interruptions by the president, and that kind of led to a chaotic, difficult to follow debate where people didn't get to see a lot of the substance and the policy proposals that the two candidates had. So they're thinking about a new approach for the second debate. That was already in the works before the president got sick. And so they might now change it even more to have, say, maybe greater distance between the candidates, or possibly even through Zoom, in order to prevent infecting Vice President Biden.
I wonder if the Biden camp would also make some stipulations here to ensure that their candidate is not infected.
Yeah, I mean, it is really scary for them, because even after the first debate, I think it might have been 2 weeks now, but when Trump first got sick, it wasn't clear that he hadn't also infected Joe Biden at the debate, because it wasn't clear when he actually became contagious. So you have two very senior citizen candidates here, and it's a little bit scary for Joe Biden now being around Trump and not knowing whether he's infectious or not. And I could understand wanting to maybe change up the format a little bit to be sure to protect his health.
So what questions, Olga, are you hoping to answer in the coming days through your reporting?
Yeah, I am also very curious what how this whole episode has affected Trump supporters' views of the president, whether this kind of confirms their suspicion that he's very strong and capable and able to handle anything that comes his way, whether this has made them more shaken up about COVID-19 and driven home what a threat it is, whether this has made them think his pandemic response, which has been widely kind of criticized in the public health community, whether maybe Trump supporters think it's actually not so bad, because look, the president himself got it. So yeah, he let it kind of roam around the White House untamed, but ultimately, look, he made it out. So I'm kind of curious about all those questions, how his supporters see this.
Olga, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on.
Olga Kazan is a staff writer at The Atlantic, covering developments at the White House and the COVID outbreak there. We'll continue this conversation ahead, opening up the lines to express how you feel at this moment about President Trump battling COVID-19. Do you think the president is taking it seriously? Will his firsthand experience change how he talks about the virus or about Democratic nominee Joe Biden and his mask wearing? Should Biden continue to campaign? Bring your thoughts, your reaction, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute with your thoughts right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about President Trump's COVID-19 treatment regimen, what it means for the White House, the campaign trail, how our country handles the severity of this virus going forward. Here is the president's physician, Sean Conley, addressing the press outside Walter Reed Medical Center yesterday afternoon.
We all remain cautiously optimistic and on guard because we're in a bit of uncharted territory when it comes to a patient that received the therapies he has so early in course. So we're looking to this weekend. If we can get through to Monday with him remaining the same or improving, better yet, then we will all take that final deep sigh of relief.
Do you believe all the information that the president's doctors and administration is sharing? What effect do you think the illness could have on the election? Still time to talk. Caller only, 800-642-1234. Let's hear thoughts from Steve in Lake Geneva. Hi, Steve.
Yes, hi there. Good morning. With respect to Trump's video yesterday, I'd just like to add that Trump in my mind, demonstrated a true failure of leadership and disregard of the science by trivializing the pandemic and the great hardship it's caused our people, and by not urging people to wear a mask and practice physical distancing when in public places, particularly indoors, and routinely wash their hands with soap and water or use hand sanitizer as a backup. This is endangering the health and well-being of our people, and in turn that of our economy, creating a destructive cycle or positive feedback loop. It's similar to climate change. Also, one thing is really critical. He failed to urge people to prioritize getting a flu shot, which is absolutely instrumental to preventing what scientists describe as a potential twindemic.
Steve, appreciate
even more difficulties and stress for our healthcare system and truly brave and heroic people.
Steve, thank you. And Steve, they're saying a true failure of heeding the science. Let's bring in Jeremy now in Racine with thoughts. Jeremy, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to address about him making statements in regards to he's feeling fine. It's not uncommon for world leaders or public leaders like presidents to voice that they're okay, everything's fine, I'm fit to run the office still, everything's going to be okay. It's not just, you know, him trying to boost his own ego. It's to reassure the people. And it not only just the American people, but geopolitically as well, because world leaders around the world will be watching it very closely to see how things are progressing. And if Trump is, you know, unable to run the office, we do have a line of succession. I have confidence that Mike Pence can take the reins and move the country forward and not really skip a beat on it. We have a line of succession for these specific incidents that do occur. So I'm not all that worried about his statement on I'm fine, no worries, I feel 20 years younger. It's to be expected.
Jeremy, does that boost your confidence, though, in how our country tackles and battles this pandemic?
It doesn't really. I'm kind of indifferent about it because everybody pretty much has a pretty good idea what they need to do to stay safe already. If you don't know what to do, then you've been living under a rock for the last 6-7 months. Everybody knows that they should be wearing masks, hand sanitizers, hygiene, keep those things up. Everybody is pretty well aware by now what they need to do to slow down the spread or to not receive it themselves. So when the president says to go out in public and just be safe about it, you know, that's pretty much what people have been doing anyways before he even contracted it. People have been moving in public. Some are not safe about it. Some of them are very safe about it. I guess that's just the way the free society works. You know, people just decide to make their own choices regardless of what government will tell them to do.
Jeremy, thank you for calling. Nancy now is joining us from Milwaukee with thoughts. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead. Hey, Nancy, can you hear us? Nope, I guess. Oh, there we go. Go ahead, Nancy.
I do believe that this might be considered a contrivance for him. I think that he has been very closely watching the polls, and he knows he's going to lose this election. Now, this is a very proud man, as are his adult children. They will never let him lose an election. They will, and he himself would never agree to have to make a concession call. Therefore, in a way, this is going to be a contrivance for him to walk away from the election 10 or 15 days from now. As he watches the polls and as he feels in his heart that he is closer and closer to losing, he's going to call a press conference and say, well, I've got this disease. I may never have the vitality and the energy I once did. The press has always been very unfair to me, and I've never been treated as well as other presidents, and
well,
Nancy, I will never have the energy, and therefore I feel I have to walk away from the election. I have to withdraw my candidacy.
And Nancy, we'll have to just watch and wait some of the voices in reaction to the president. Now, in a year of COVID-19, social unrest and widespread unemployment, the Affordable Care Act didn't start off as a major campaign issue in the presidential race, but it's suddenly become one following the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. As Shemaine Mills reports, the Republican push to replace Ginsburg has refocused attention on a court case that could scrap the ACA.
The U.S. Supreme Court has twice upheld what's commonly referred to as Obamacare, but now the composition of the court has changed. There's one less supporter of the ACA on the High Court with Justice Ginsburg gone, and President Trump has nominated Judge Amy Coney Barrett to replace her. Suddenly, Democrats, including former Vice President Joe Biden, have been shifting their focus to the court and the signature health care law they helped pass.
This is about your health care. This is about whether or not the ACA will exist. This is about whether or not pre-existing conditions will be continued to be covered.
The fate of the ACA will be decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in a case scheduled for arguments just 1 week after the election. Trump ran in 2016 on a promise to get rid of the ACA. 4 years later, he's still saying that.
We're going to replace Obamacare with great health care at a lesser price.
Lawyers for the Trump administration have called on the Supreme Court to repeal the entire ACA. They argue that because Congress eliminated the penalty for not having insurance, the law is no longer valid and the whole thing should go. The health care fight is a familiar one, but circumstances are different than they were 4 years ago. Polling shows the law is more popular now. Part of the reason Obamacare initially struggled to gain public support is because people are generally happy with the insurance they have through their jobs. But those who are self-employed either have to go without insurance or buy their own. For the last 2 years, Ron Robleski has purchased a policy through the Affordable Care Act marketplace.
I wanted to have health care. I wanted to have health insurance. I value being healthy. I want to stay walking this earth for as long as I can physically manage.
The 60-year-old Madison mechanical engineer is generally in good health. He's trim and likes to hike, bike, and ski when he's not running his company, Productive Energy Solutions. 2 years ago, he was hospitalized for intestinal bleeding.
I was lucky, and they were able to find the spot where it was bleeding and clamp it off. And it was, a successful intervention.
Robleski says if he hadn't had insurance, he probably would have delayed going to the doctor.
So it's just absolutely mind-boggling to me that in the midst of all that, people are still talking about gutting the ACA and kicking more people off of their health insurance.
The global pandemic has also placed healthcare in a different light this year. Hundreds of thousands have died in the U.S. and millions have lost their jobs. Karen Politz is with the Kaiser Family Foundation.
It just provides a new lens for thinking about all these things. So, you know, insurance covering preventive services, including vaccines, very popular when you think about insurance covering a coronavirus vaccine. You know, that just sort of makes it, I think, real for people in a different way.
Beyond that, there are other elements of the ACA that affect nearly everyone. For example, it lets children stay on their parents' insurance until they turn 26. And it also got rid of a donut hole in Medicare prescription drug coverage. And it eliminated annual and lifetime limits on health coverage.
And if that were all overturned, people would notice.
Trump and Biden are still talking about other topics, from one another's temperament to police to the economy. But the pandemic, along with the death of Justice Ginsburg, has once again put a focus on the Affordable Care Act, a law that has divided the country for more than a decade. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Be sure to stay with us. Just ahead, it is 1A, tracking the coronavirus cluster at the White House and on Capitol Hill. The conversation continues, talking about the safety precautions available for the staff that works at the White House and answering your questions about the president's health. That is 1A. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.